There is nothing artificial about leadership. As leaders worth following, we must upgrade our relational operating systems. Because real influence comes from leaders who build trust with empathy and insight. LeaderCast presents Human Intelligence with Radhika Dirks, Henry Cloud, Andy Stanley, Stephanie Chung, Eddie Ndopu, Erica Keswin, Joe Boyd, and Jeremy Kubicek. Join us and help fill the world with leaders worth following.
The preschool was in the basement. I'm walking up the sidewalk to my car, and I just turn and glance in the window as I'm walking past, and I see that he's toppled over. And I also see that he can't get himself back up, and I already knew that. And I also see all the other little kids who are three and under just running circles around him. And I see that he's completely helpless.
Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast, a weekly deep dive into the stories that transformed our guests into leaders worth following. I'm your host, Joe Boyd. If you've been enjoying the podcast, thank you so much for being a listener. One simple thing you can do to help us out is give a review wherever you listen. Today's guest is Amy Odell. She is a friend of mine and a friend of LeaderCast. She spoke recently at our women's event called Amplify. She's the CEO and founder of Jacob's Ladder, which is a nonprofit school and research center in Roswell, Georgia. And she has a story that you could instantly make a movie about. We're just going to spend some time and walk through her amazing story, where you can see how her pain transformed into a lot of love in the world. Hi, Amy Odell. Welcome to the LeaderCast podcast.
Oh, hello, Joe. It's so good to see you. Thank you for the invitation.
It is great to see you too. And I couldn't be more thrilled that our paths crossed. My buddy Jason Teagle introduced us, and then you were able to speak at our women's event, Amplify, in the fall of 22. And you slayed, you killed it. It was amazing. It really did impact so many people, including me. I was in the back of the room just learning a ton from you and really, really loving that you were a part of it. So thank you so much for being there.
I appreciate those words very, very much. It meant a whole lot to me to be a part of that. And I enjoyed it immensely. So thank you for that invitation as well.
You're welcome. And you are a part of our LeaderCast Now platform. And folks can, after this podcast, go to LeaderCast Now and see a bunch of videos from you and some of the things you had to teach us. But for today, we just want to get to know you and your story and how you got to where you are. So I obviously know a bit of it. The story, as I've heard you tell it a couple of times, usually sort of begins with your son and that, but could you take us back a little farther? And I would just love to know, how did you grow up? What was little Amy like? Were you getting in trouble? Were you hiding under a tree reading books? Like what kind of little girl were you? And what were your earliest sort of inclinations to maybe want to go do something with your life? Or what were your fantasies as a little kid? Let's get to know little Amy a bit.
Wow. What great questions. I'll tell you the first couple of things that pop into my mind with that question. Funny, two memories kind of simultaneously.
Yeah.
One, I was probably 8, 9, 10 years old, at this memory point, but, I grew up in, my hometown was Madison, Georgia. I grew up there pretty much my entire life from kindergarten all the way through when I, you know, left for college. And the memory that came to mind is me walking through the woods from my house. And this is going to sound like a super odd thing to have popped into my mind, but this is what popped into my mind, honestly. Walking through the woods to the water treatment plant of my city, which was at the end of a dirt road. And I didn't go by road. I went by woods. Mm. The reason that I was walking to the water treatment plant is because it housed the dog pound for the city.
Okay.
And I felt such a pull to as many days of the week as I could to take that walk and to go over to the dog pound, which back in those days, there weren't a whole lot of people pulling for the dogs at the dog pounds.
Right.
There wasn't a great system around that. And I don't know, I just felt a great sense of sadness about kind of their life plot and that they didn't have a place of belonging and they didn't have anybody caring for them. And so that was my earliest, that was the first memory that sort of popped up. And then simultaneous to that, I had a little vision of myself sitting in my bedroom and I had taken some notebook paper and my father's hole puncher and made myself a personal journal and tied it together with yarn. And I was collecting quotes from Joan of Arc. And I recently dug some of those things back up.
Oh, you still have the journal? Yeah.
I do. And then I started, and I hadn't read about her in a long time, but I did recently. And I'm just absolutely floored by so much of her story, her life story. And I think the thing that struck with me the most is, gosh, there's so much, but at a quick glance, it was that, you know, as this 15, 16 year old young woman, she just had this sense of a call on her life that was indisputable. And she was going to be unstoppable in light of that. And so if you read about her whole story about saving France, and she was somewhat responsible for getting King Charles anointed to kingship and just fighting her battles and whatever. What also happened to her is that people called her crazy, you know?
Yeah.
they said, you can't possibly be hearing or understanding these things. And if you read about the process she had to go through for them to declare her, you know, insane, whatever, they said, maybe she has brain tumors, maybe this, maybe that. And then they burned her at the stake when she's 19 years old. But then what amazed me is that even though it took 500 years after she's burned at the stake and called all kinds of things, crazy, heretic, whatever, the Pope canonizes her.
Yeah.
And it just made me think about, I don't know, strength, wisdom, where those things come from, when you feel a conviction about something. I believe if you feel a conviction about something and that there's like a call on your life or something, that you're fully equipped to do it, even though it has to play itself out in your life.
Yeah.
And even though she had to go through all that, she was fully equipped. And she walked it out. And so there's just so much about that story, about how people viewed her, treated her, but ultimately what she accomplished and what her legacy is. So I don't know. That's what popped to mind. Joan of Arc.
Well, I have to say both those things, having met you this year and only knowing grown-up Amy O'Dell, you can see how that both those things relate to where you are now to me. And a heart for the forgotten and overlooked, like that's your whole thing. And then just being brave and bold and being willing to be called crazy because you have a dream. So it's always interesting to me, even when they just pop into your head you can call it a calling or whatever, that so many of us, it's in us and our life is just sort of a process of kind of walking it out. And sometimes it's more clear when we're 8 years old than when we're 38 or 48.
Because we have lessons, you know, like we gather all these messages from around us and then it becomes clutter that we have to work our way through. At least the way I experienced it.
We know who we are until we're old enough to question it. Right. And then it's a process of rediscovering it. I am curious like most little girls are not researching Joan of Arc. So do you know what made that? Do you remember hearing that story the first time? Was it in school or church or something, or did you just, how did you know, about her?
The memory that I have, both of my parents read a lot. So we had bookcases of books in our den. And I guess here's another thing I would call out about myself is that I was, I'm very much an introvert.
Yeah.
Very much. I love my solitude. I love my environment matters a great deal to me. Having peace around me and having calm and beauty around me matters a lot to me. And so even as a child, which is probably why I was out walking through the woods a lot, I don't know. I mean, it's just when you're kind of wired like that, like a lot of people are, you have to work to kind of find your way and where you fit in and where you don't fit in. And so if you're seeking quiet, you tend to do things like read and pay attention to other people who are kind of wired towards that tendency to want to look for things that matter is the best way I could say it. And so anytime something came across my path and I felt like, my goodness, that feels like wisdom to me, or it feels like it matters, or it feels important, I just started writing down like one line at a time from different people, different things that I remember this old leather bound book that my mother had called Leaves of Gold. I don't even know who wrote it, but I just can see it in my mind's eye. Yeah. Leaves of Gold. And it just had all these different quotes in it from different people, and the pages were all yellowed. And I just remember flipping through that. And then I just would be struck by something. And then I would pull it out and write it in that little homemade journal, you know? So I don't know how to explain that. It's just what I did.
Us introverts, we got to, you know what, God or the universe or however you want to think about it, does tend to force introverts in the public eye. It's a weird situation for so many of us. I don't know what's going on with that, but I'm an introvert too. And I spent my whole life on stage and in front of cameras and who knows, but,
No, but it is, it does tend to work like that sometimes. And okay, whatever.
Whatever. Your story is so fascinating to me, and some folks here know it, but I'm actually struggling right now about what to talk about next. But I think I just want to take it chronologically, and folks that don't know your story at all, it'll unfold as we go. So obviously I know it's, at some point you're going to have a major shift in your life, around caring for your son. But before that point, so take us like when, as you are becoming a young woman, are you having sort of, does any of that sort of calling or passion get formalized into something that you want to do with your life? Did you have a plan or a career hopes or anything like that as you were going to college and all that?
I did. And I think it's, I look back from this standpoint and look back at those years. And of course, I had no idea how the pieces would be woven together, right?
Yep.
But I did have a very distinct feeling in my heart always about people that were struggling or didn't have a place or, weren't treated as worthy or whatever that was. Like situations like that always just affected me.
Yeah.
When I went to college, my undergraduate was in activity therapy, and I ended up working at in a school system for a short amount of time. Never thought I would be an educator, which is kind of funny based on what's now happened in my life. But I did not feel called to be an educator at that point. Spent a very short amount of time in the school system. And then I transitioned into a hospital setting. First it was with folks suffering from addiction. So I worked for, I don't know, probably 10 years in an addiction recovery center, and was promoted as director of a child and adolescent psychiatric unit. And that was up in the Blue Ridge Mountains, up in Rebin County. And I had in that time period married, I had a daughter who was 3, 4 years old. And then I went back to graduate school, got a degree in counseling, became licensed as a professional counselor. But so I was kind of in that mode. Mm-hmm. But what I would say about that time in my life, learned so much as part of the Addiction Recovery Center, so much. I'm thankful that they kept me on staff because I did more learning than I did helping, you know, and I know that. But what a great time in my life to just absorb from other people in the field who are seasoned and wise and skilled at helping others. And so I look back at that time and I'm super grateful. By the time I was doing the child and adolescent psychiatric facility, that for me, in all honesty, was painful because it was a bit of time of seeing how broken our system is.
Yeah.
And how in deep need children and those teens were and their families, but it was all driven by what our health insurance system is able to cover or not cover. And so it was very little about what actually needs to happen and more so about how's it going to be paid for. And so being part of that paradigm, you know, I experienced a lot and I saw a lot, and I also felt a little bit like my hands were tied. And then I started to feel a little bit like I was part of the problem, and that didn't feel so great either. Yeah. So I look back at all that and I think needed to go through it, had to go through it, had to learn a lot, had to step into a role that I frankly felt ill-equipped to walk out well, had to humble myself and learn. And all of that became very critical to me. And that's actually, it was during that phase of my life that Jacob was born. And that was, I think, the big transition point. I had kept that job. He was about 16 months old, 17 months old. And I found this wonderful little preschool in a church basement up in Rabun County. And I felt comfortable taking him there because I love the people so much. But he had a fairly profound diagnosis, pervasive developmental delay. So it affected him in a lot of different ways, physically, cognitively, vision, hearing, just all sorts of ways. And on this particular day, which was pretty much my life transition day, I dropped him off at that preschool. And even, you know, as he's getting close to 2 years of age, he couldn't sit up independently. Hmm. And I could prop him up, and if everything was going well, he could balance himself in a seated position, right? But if he turned his head, looked around, tried to scan, tried to move his arms, then he'd topple over and he didn't have any way to get himself back upright. So I dropped him off. I'm walking outside back to my car and I peek through the window. I wasn't even really trying to peek through the window, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
The preschool was in the basement. I'm walking up the sidewalk to my car. And I just turn and glance in the window as I'm walking past, and I see that he's toppled over. And I also see that he can't get himself back up, and I already knew that. And I also see all the other little kids who are three and under just running circles around him.
Yeah.
And I see that he's completely helpless. And then I thought, it was just like the snap of a finger. It was like that day, it shifted, and I didn't go to work. I went back in, I picked him up, brought him out, put him on my hip, got to the car, drove to work, resigned that day, told him why, and didn't even have another plan. Didn't really have another income. But it's so weird, Joe, because I would say I also had zero fear or doubt about what I was going to do next. It was like everything that I had accumulated in my belief system about what mattered. And also, I don't know, just this sense of conviction, you know?
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, we're driving forth and we're going to do something different. And that's when the whole next part of life opened up. You know, it's learning everything I needed to learn to understand what was really going on for him and start building something. I didn't know I was building anything, by the way. I just thought I was building him.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, he built me, and that's the truth. So.
You don't want the lack of professional development opportunities to cost you top talent. The reality is that All-Star employees look for and stay with employers who invest in them and their growth. And one of the easiest ways for you to provide that is by streaming LeaderCast's newest event, Human Intelligence. There is nothing artificial about leadership. Real influence comes from leaders who build trust with empathy and insight. Invest in and empower your talent with LeaderCast Human Intelligence. Sign up now to stream the event at leadercast.com.
Well, I will let everyone know this story is going to have an incredibly happy ending in the end. So as we tell it, let's not start getting nervous. But I do want to, I can't help but want to know things like, so for the 2 years from when he was born and you knew that there would be some sort of struggle, right? To the, yeah. To your breaking point's not your transition point of just instant, yeah. Like a Jerry Maguire moment. Like some, most of us don't have that, but some of us in our lives can pinpoint the moment that everything changed.
Yeah.
I'm curious emotionally what was going on. Like, how important was your career to you before he was born? And had you already been sort of processing that maybe this is going to change everything for you? I'm just kind of curious, were you angry that about his situation? Like, what were you going through emotionally the 2 years before you just transitioned?
Yeah. That's a great question. And my honest answer is I've never known fear deeper than the fear that I felt about that. And I didn't know what to do with it, to be honest with you. I just remember looking back and thinking, How is this fear not going to consume me?
Yeah.
I remember feeling like that. And so every day in the meantime, I think I was going through the motions, thinking that I was doing all the sort of typical things, not knowing what else to do. Like, okay, just keep going. And, you know, everybody else takes their kids to preschool or nursery, and you got to work. So just take them to nursery, and you got to keep things moving. And you know, so I was going through all of the necessities just to keep us moving forward. And, you know, God bless my sweet daughter. So what, she's like 4 years old, and I'm sure she sensed so much of my fear. And so I look back and think, you know, and I say this for a reason, it wasn't just Jacob, and it wasn't just his dad and I processing what was going on. It was, there's always a circle of people that are influenced and impacted, right? In a family system or even a broader family system. And so I know she was impacted by 2-3 years of watching her mom survive a deep fear response. And so I think one of the things that I think that would be my honest answer, going through the necessities, living with this consuming fear, not really knowing what to do about it. And then part of the kind of aha moment on the transition moment on the sidewalk, my sidewalk moment was just kind of this realization that I had a lot of energy pulsing through my veins, right? And it was mostly driven into a fear response.
Yeah.
But heaven knows, like, just the energy that was going through my heart, my mind, my veins, my body. Like, okay, well, it's all there, but it sure is not producing anything positive at this point.
Yeah.
And so how do I harness all of that? I remember having this exact thought, honestly, is if I'm going to expend all this and it feels like it's consuming me right now from the inside out, how do I take it and harness it into something that could be transformative? And I don't know that I actually thought that word transformative. Now I know that's what it was.
Yeah.
Back then I just thought, my goodness, I just need a plan. I just need a plan, and I need to harness this energy and I need to put it into the plan. And that's what I thought. Yeah. And that's what I did. And at that point, I'll just be totally frank. It was like blinders were on. And if other than keeping my little family afloat, if anything coming at me from the outside didn't somehow move that plan forward, I just couldn't give it much I just couldn't give it much energy. Like, we're doing this, and that's what we did. And I honestly, I did think it was just about helping him. And of course it really was, because it's always about loving the person right in front of you always, you know? And so that's what it really was. But I will also jump ahead and tell you, and this might be where you need to start editing things out. I'll jump ahead and tell you this part because it's also true. I kept a consulting role at the hospital only on the terms that I could make it work. And he always went with me. So I had one of those little front baby packs.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I'd pack him in that little thing and I'd walk into the hospital, and he never left my presence when I would go in and do an hour of this or an hour of that. And I remember someone walked up to me, and he was in his little pack and I was carrying him, and they called him Jake, because his name is Jacob, and they called him, and they said, "Oh, this is Jake." And something again, just like snap. And I was like, "No, his name is not Jake. His name is Jacob." And it was in that moment that I actually, in my mind, saw our present logo of Jacob's Ladder. Like, I so clearly saw it.
Huh.
And I don't know how to explain that other than it was a flash. His name is Jacob. This is what we're doing. And then I didn't think about that again for a long time. But that's when that happened too.
That's fascinating.
Right around the same time.
Yeah. So we'll get right into then how, by the way, I'm a nerdy fella as an introvert, and I actually have I have a degree in biblical studies, and I was always fascinated with the particular name meetings, especially in like the Pentateuch. And Jacob is a really fat, I'm sure you know, but at the point where Jacob's name is changed and other things happening, one of his names is sort of, he struggles but overcomes is part of is Jacob's story, right? So even that, you know, not to make too much of it, but there's almost that mark on him of it will be a struggle, but he will overcome. So let's get to the overcoming part and let's see where the story's going. So you said you were just sort of focused on him, as you should be, and you didn't even think how it would affect other people. When were the first moments where you realized, oh, like, by me loving my son, I'm actually going to be able to help other people? When did that start to happen?
So one of the first times was, one of my very close friends that lived up in Rabun County, and in that point in time in Rabun County, which is northern Georgia, very rural, there weren't a lot of options or a base of intervention for kids who needed that kind of help. And one of my best friends that I had worked with a bit at the hospital had a son with some complex issues, and she knew what I was doing, you know, when I was working from home. And so the very first person outside of being with Jacob was my best friend's son. And she drove him up to my house. And I vividly see this as well. We went out on my back porch and we sat down and had a discussion. I spent just a little time with her little boy. And I said, "Here's what I think we need to do." And I wrote it down. And, we found somebody that would be with him and work with him. And later on, not too long after that, so when Jacob turned 5 years old, my marriage dissolved. And I knew when he was around 4 or 5 years old, I did feel a distinct pull to step into whatever was next.
Yeah.
And we left the North Georgia mountains. We moved to Atlanta. We didn't know a soul, didn't have a job. And I know this just sounds crazy, but it is how it happened. We rented an apartment. My parents helped me financially for a little while. I, with all of my ignorance, started hanging up flyers around Atlanta to do these little seminars, I call them.
Yeah.
And three, four, five people at a time started showing up. And if three people showed up, I ended up working with those three families. If five people showed up, I ended up working with those five families. And it was around that time, which would have been around 1999, that I knew that I couldn't work with the kids and keep working with Jacob. So I hired my first two people, then my first three people. And then the story just kept unfolding. You know, it's like I had three staff and I had, you know, we had 10 kids coming in. Someone gave me a converted nail salon in a Walmart shopping center off of Ashford Dunwoody Road for 1 year. And they said, you can have it for a year, but after that, you're on your own. And I'm like, I'll take it. I was proud to have it. Those 10 kids came to that converted nail salon at the Walmart shopping center, and we served them. And I thought, man, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was, I thought it was awesome.
That was the dream. Yeah.
Like, oh gosh, I got a spot that we go to every day. So we did that for a year. And then I was tired of living in a busy area of Atlanta, and I went out on a drive, got lost, found the home that was my dream home, bought it, moved the 10 kids to my basement, and then did that for 2-3 years. And then I had a little rented spot, and then we grew in the rented spot to maybe 37, 40 kids. And then somewhere around 2007, 2008, Jacob and I were driving to the I was driving him to the dentist, and we rode by what is our present campus, which is 17 acres in a city called Roswell, Georgia. Didn't start out as 17 acres, started out with 3.5 acres and an old farmhouse that we converted into a school building, went through city zoning, did all that, which my goodness, the things I've learned that I knew nothing about, right? I mean, you learn what you got to learn, but the whole time until Jacob was 14 years old, even though we were sort of building the school and hiring people and training people, I worked with him every day, at least 5 hours, usually 6 hours a day, one-on-one, until he was 14 years old. And I would say probably the last 4 to 5 years of that, I just did because we were having such a great time.
Yeah.
I was just teaching him, but he is so smart, and he's so inquisitive, and he was just so much fun to learn with. I mean, he would ask me things that I had never even thought of, and he would ask me all the time. And then one day he said to me, and I didn't know the answer, frankly. I mean, stuff that I had never even considered. And so we just started a list of all the questions he wanted answered that I had no answer to. And that became part of our day, is finding answers to all the things that he wanted to know about how to teach him. So anyway, what a process to go through. And again, I said earlier that I thought I was putting him together, but shoot, man, it was in the process he put me together, and that's the truth.
Yeah.
Really.
So, I mean, it's a beautiful story, and there's no, for some reason, it makes me think of the idea that there's no pleasure without pain, right? If we couldn't feel pain, we wouldn't know pleasure. And the gift, and I'm sure you still have painful moments for sure. Everybody does, but the gift of that pain is all the pleasure you get to see now, I'm sure.
Right. He's he's 29 years old now, and he's a teacher at the school. He works in a program called a Hope School, which is for kids who have struggled emotionally or behaviorally. And I just watch, you know, there's a lot about the refining process for all of us. And the strength that's made in the refining process. And I was having a conversation recently about resiliency, and that's become a big buzzword in, you know, the field of mental health, is how to help people build resiliency. And I think about the kids here and the teenagers and the young adults that we work with, and even my own staff. You know, we've got hundreds of staff, and most of them are in their 20s or early 30s. And I always tell them, when I look back at my 20s, I think a lot of people had a heck of a lot of fun, but I can only say that I found my 20s to be quite difficult. And anyway, about resiliency, you can try to teach someone resiliency. You can try to teach some steps and kind of instill knowledge about resiliency, but I don't believe that you ever possess it until you just go through the hard thing. Yeah. And go through the hard thing and go through the hard thing. And then I think you become, is it 2 Peter 5:10? I think that's the right verse. I don't know, but about, after you've suffered for a while, I'll perfect you and establish you and settle you. And I think of those words about being established and settled, so that whatever kind of comes next, you've got a kind of a core base of strength.
You're the best. Thank you for sharing with us. I'm also a recovering movie producer, and your life just unfolds like you can just see the movie scenes. And none of us have the time or money to do that right now, but that would be fun to tell the story that way. Could you just as a straight up, like, so people know, what is Jacob's Ladder today? How many kids are you serving? Like, where has it grown to?
So we have a campus in Roswell, as I mentioned. It's a beautiful, beautiful, special place. If you go to jacobcenter.com, you can kind of see images of the campus and the work and the team. And it's also a beautiful team of people. I just have to say that. I'm just amazed every day at the people that make the choice to show up and be here and work here and serve here. And so it's incredible. We have over 100 students that we work very diligently with, staying very true to the model that was established in the beginning. A lot of one-on-one, super intentional, very targeted work with a whole lot of relationship, whole lot of love, whole lot of compassion, whole lot of belonging, which is a really big deal. Even in neuroscience, that sense of safety and belonging, it triggers things in the brain that that you'll never get to when someone's in a mode of depletion or fear. And so, which kind of goes back to my consuming fear from before, like, again, you know, those things feel very real, and you can see it in other people. And so anyway, campus here, love it so much. We have a second campus in Buckhead, in the heart of Atlanta, inside the perimeter. I'm very excited about this. And you mentioned the names, kind of especially Old Testament names. I was looking up my name in Hebrew, just wondered what it would be, because I'm fascinated by the origin of names. And my name in Hebrew is Ahava. And then you keep reading, and Ahava is the Hebrew word for love. And what we've done this last couple of years is, I think, so important, and it feels so important to me. We took everything that we as a collective team have ever known to be true about how you collect histories from families and clients, how you evaluate, how you build programs, how you teach, how you rehabilitate, how you surround people in love, how you build teams to serve. And we put it all and built it into a customized software platform. Okay. And we named that Ahava. And Ahava has the ability to go out and be accessed anywhere around the whole world. And I think that, for me, just feels like one of the most important things in my life right now, is making sure that that gets completed and completed well, with a level of excellence that feels true to what the calling was initially. Mm-hmm. It should be complete in maybe 6 months from now. We've been working on it for 5 years. And should be complete in 6 months. And then our goal is to reach anyone who is seeking, you know, if there's someone, and in terms of, is there a mental health crisis? Is there a child with developmental delays? Is there a child with an autism diagnosis, a brain injury diagnosis, a young adult who doesn't have a path forward and they're kind of stuck in their life? I mean, there's so many implications of it, but so that's what we're doing. We're serving in our campuses in real time. We have a bit of a research institute going on called the Pillar Research Institute. And if I could just say this, because you mentioned it and it's important to me, Jacob's Ladder was named Jacob's Ladder first, just because I saw it as taking one step at a time up the ladder towards something better and brighter. Mm-hmm. And then I understood a bit more about the origin, kind of the genesis of Jacob's Ladder. Mm-hmm. And then it started meaning other things to me. And then along comes the idea of Ahava, which is just love, and how do you get it out there? And we decided to name the research institute the Pillar Research Institute, because I loved the part about the Jacob's Ladder origin, about Jacob taking the rocks mm-hmm. and building the pillar.
Yeah.
As a monument. And so for me, that's kind of the completion. I believe it's the completion of the full circle. Who knows? But I think so. You know, it's three entities working together.
Well, thank you so much for all your time. And what I see a grown-up woman that an 8, 9, 10-year-old little Amy would be proud of. And aww. I think you've been very true to your calling. And one of my very favorite people I got to meet last year. So thank you so much for being a part of this and telling your story. And it will affect people in ripples that you will, neither of us will know about. But it means the world to me that you're, officially a friend of mine, whether you like it or not. And part of LeaderCast. Amy, thank you so much for being a part of this.
Oh, those words mean a whole lot to me. I'm going to take them and keep them yeah. close to my heart. Thank you very much. Thanks for letting me be here.
Okay.
We'll you are a friend. I'm proud to be a friend. So right. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll take it. Okay. We'll talk to you soon.
Right, thanks.
Bye.
Empower yourself and your team to tackle some of the most difficult leadership challenges and grow professionally with LeaderCast Now. The LeaderCast Now app, an online platform, provides you access to more than 1,000 video lessons to help you navigate issues like change management, remote working guidelines, emotional intelligence, workplace conflict, negotiating, and more. Visit LeaderCastNow.com for more info.